Welcome to the Security Today podcast. I'm your host, Uncle Bear, and this podcast is brought to you by Sprinter Business Solutions. I don't have a podcast this week, but I did want to come out and replay a couple episodes that are a ways back from, I think, June. Are we dealing in June of 22? Episode 24 and 25, dealing with problem solving. I feel like that's something that could get highlighted again. And some of my listeners have probably not even made it that far back into the archive, which shame, shame. I know your name. But no. So things are running a pretty hot and heavy here from my W-2 where I'm working as a security engineer specialist. And so that's been pretty heavy for December. And then I'm also on my off time spending all of it trying to get out the Security Today podcast educational resource. Black Picket Fence is launching its first course. That's right. And so I have set a date as of January 1st. There's been a couple of hiccups with the platform that I'm trying to get it out on. So we're dealing with that, but we are dealing with it. That's right. So you don't have to worry. Everything is good. I have some plans for January of 2024. Coming into 2024, the Security Today podcast will be, kind of more positioning itself towards video interviews. So I'll have a couple video interviews a month with a couple of the original broadcasts a month, still providing you that security news and highlights that you do so need in your career. But some of our segments have really taken off and they're getting a lot of feedback, and I want to highlight those. I want those to be out front so that you are getting as much information to help you be informed, indulged and be instructed on what to do and where to do it. So with that, look forward to the Black Picket Fence first course, Professional Access Wiring by Bear. It's going to go over everything to do with the access control circuit. It's dropping January 1st. You can go to www.blackpicketfenceonline.com/PAW, P-A-W, Professional Access Wiring. That's right, the Bear Paw. And you can sign up there, put your email in, and then I will flag you as soon as that thing has hit the pavement running. So just take in the next, I guess we're going to go like 40 minutes-ish because it's two original podcasts back to back. They were actually kind of spaced when they were released about a month apart, but they deal with part one and part two of dealing with problems in the field, from troubleshooting to understanding how the problem works so that you can just understand problems better. That's going to be something that is going to educate you and advance your career in a way that you don't even understand. So it is something that is dire. So I hope you enjoy it. We're going to get back into it this next year. I'm so excited. The Security Today podcast is kind of making a name for itself, getting some roots buried. And that is all thanks to every single one of you. So just imagine I'm in your car right now in a Santa outfit. Maybe no shirt under the Santa coat, okay? That's for a couple of you, wink. And then just giving you high fives all day. That's my main goal. That's my main mission here. On everything you do with your career, giving you a high five in a Santa suit while I'm giving a little bit of chest cleavage. Why are you still listening to this? Okay, we'll get started now. But I appreciate every single one of you. And Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, and a Happy New Year to every single soul. And hey, I did want to mention that on this podcast, I say Security Bear. It is at Uncle B-A-E-R _ Uncle Bear. Okay, goodbye. You know those rare days where you're like trying to figure something out and it's an actual problem with like the hardware wiring or the programming or the switch configuration, and it's just barely beyond your understanding? And then once you figure it out, there's that sweet relief to see that camera come up or that card read unlock that door or that relay trip. It's just such a good feeling. And then the immediate self-upset comes, realizing the problem next time can probably be fixed in 15 minutes and you've been on site for 6 hours. Yeah, that feeling. Oof.
Welcome
Welcome to Security Today, episode 24. I am the security industry's most problematic solving bear. That's B-A-E-R. So follow me right now on Instagram and Twitter at Security B-A-E-R and this podcast on Instagram at Security Today Podcast. Hello, another week in the bag. This thing is rolling nice and I like it. Hey, it helps beyond belief to subscribe to this podcast on whatever platform you're listening to. Like, share, follow, and blast it out all over the Instaverse. And then if you do these things, I will owe you 1,000 suns. And when we are all living in space in about 30 years, I'll make do on my promise. So there you go. Just cash in on those burning bright balls of gas. Okay, these things have been going great. The things that you're listening to with this podcast, all you listeners seem to be maybe gleaning just a little bit from it, and you just interacting and helping contribute with ideas and new perspectives via the DMs. So I just really appreciate that. If there's something that you want to hear on this podcast or that's interesting to you, go ahead and hit me up. Let me know. And I also want to shout out once again www.securitytodaypodcast.com. That's still in existence. I am twiddling my thumbs a little bit on what to do with it, but I like it, so it's going to stay around. The other thing is we're working on a couple of maybe new different formatted podcasts that can show up maybe quarterly or something like that, where we interview maybe someone who owns a security type business, how they go about their daily operations, and maybe we'll have a guest or something like that on one of these podcasts once I figure out a platform to do that. Hey, if you're podcasting, if you're also a podcaster and or you know a podcaster and they do guests on their podcast, could you just DM me really quick and let me know like what they're using to do that? Because big ideas over here, but I need a little aid from the community. So let me know about that. We'll just get to what we're going to today. Let's talk about what we're going to talk about. Ring, ring. Hello. Yeah. Onviv is kicking ass and Bear is going to tell you how. That's right. We'll get into that with a little bit of product highlight. And then we're also going to chit chat a little bit about a robot that patrols Six Flags and then destroys bad children. Okay, not exactly, but we will talk about the robot. And then finally, we're going to dive in to a very serious skill needed for this industry and life, really. But with more growth and more understanding, my hope with this topic is to ease some frustration. That's right. The next two episodes, we're going to be talking about just essentially the overwork of diagnosis. That's right. Troubleshooting, diagnostics, some things like that. How to approach problems. I want to make sure that while we will be highlighting things within the industry, you're not just coming here for news, you're also coming here to be the better technician, because that's what I try to push every single episode, every single week. So I just want you to be that better technician. So I'm going to use a couple of these podcasts to tell you how I have detailed some things, researched a little bit on how to approach problems and how that's helped me in the field. And if you are someone who is good at troubleshooting, or you troubleshot yesterday or last week a big problem, and this podcast lines up, or you approached it with a different method, I want to hear about it so that I can get it out to these listeners, because I am just the mouthpiece, just the voice, the guy on the other end of the podcast tickling your eardrums every week and making you feel like a rock star. But you guys are the ones who make sure that you can reach the community with your information by coming to me and saying, hey, look, I approach problems like this. And then when I read it, I'll be like, oh, wow, yeah, that's a great way to approach problems. I'll make sure to mention it next podcast or something to that degree. So being that I want you guys to be the best technicians that you can be, you know that every single week we shout out a Instagram handle on the podcast to make sure you're following and seeing the good work and the good deeds of the saints in the technician role out there in the security industry. And this week I'm going to
Might seem a little self-indulgent, but we're going to shout out at Clean Can Mafia. You've probably heard me say that. You've probably seen it. What was that? Gee whiz. You probably heard me shout it out on my Instagram, talk about it. Maybe you even follow it. And that is because I run the Clean Can Mafia page on Instagram. But really, I just want you to see some incredible work this community's turning out. Clean Can Mafia is a members only category, so don't be repping your mafia that you're a mafia member without turning out some of the cleanest cans imaginable. But if you know how to ferrule, how to wind wire, and you a no shine boy, your boy, then get you some. Hashtag those installs, please. When you're putting in those clean cans and you're proud of your work, go ahead and just hashtag Clean Can Mafia, tag at Clean Can Mafia on Instagram, and go follow and just scroll through. See some of the stuff that's been posted, from everything from electricians to security installers, intrusion detection systems installers, those sorts of things. There are some cans out there that are popping, and I want every can to look like that, because let me tell you something. There has been, I can remember specifically, a can that I rolled up on in the middle of Kansas. It was like a 4 to 6 hour drive from my home, right? But they were having problems. They were in my region. I drove out there. I hadn't been out there before. I popped the can open, and good Lord, it was clean. And I was so happy. I think I even talked. I think I even shared it on my Instagram. If you go back in my feed, but it is another type of feeling when you can see a clean can on a site that you haven't been to before. It's just an awesome feeling. So push those clean cans, follow at Clean Can Mafia, and become a Clean Can Mafia member. Let's chit chat. That's right. Patrons at Six Flag Amusement Park locations in California and Texas now may interact with a new type of security officer, a security robot. The 6-foot-tall, 750-pound security robot, looking more like a Wall-E Baymax RoboCop, dubbed the Rugged Observation Assistance Mobile Electronic Office. Jesus, people, could it be any longer? Mobile Electronic Officer, they shorten it to Romeo. Romeo will patrol in the parks and surrounding parking lots. The security robot includes surveillance cameras, a touchscreen, a two-way method of communication. The company is looking to put the Romeo 2.0 with features like being fully autonomous in navigation with rough terrain suspension and wheels, or credential validation and access control. Maybe some LPR, helping a customer who's lost and throwing a panic button or an over-the-air software update, putting this into Universal and Walt Disney type of places as well. Now, if they get that thing in Walt Disney and it doesn't have a miniature MO following it around, I'm going to be disappointed. I hope you got that. There's definitely a market for robot security, and it will have its place moving forward. We will reach Star Wars iRobot levels. Eh? We might be off the planet before that happens, but who knows? But for now, if you are going to a weekend of long lines, trashy food, and expenses, well, then look for our pal, Rugged Observation Assistant Mobile, whatever his name is. Look for Romeo out there. So DM me if you have ever seen one of these. I want to know if it, like, hunted you down, or, you know, you had to change your eyeballs to get past it or something. Hey, let's move on to our product highlight on Viv, okay? OnViv, if you don't know it, go look it up. Established in 2008 by Axis Communications, Bosch Security Systems, and Sony Corporation, they all got together and made OnViv, which is a global and open industry forum that's committed to standardize communication between network devices and ensure interoperability between network products for the security market. OnViv's mission is to facilitate the integration of network security and safety devices using global open standard. Now, I tell you that to tell you this. Ring has made a smart business move, and the Amazon-owned do-it-yourself home security product manufacturer announced a couple Wednesdays ago of me recording this. They announced on a Wednesday that it will soon be rolling out a new integration of for cameras that support OnViv standards. In a statement, the company said that once the integration is made available in late April, Customers with the Ring Alarm Pro and Ring Protect Pro plan can onboard select OnViv cameras to the Ring app for control and access. I am not a fan of DIY alarm or security products. I think that they undermine the importance and in the hands of a non-security professional get implemented poorly, thus defeating some of the purpose of their use and lowering security. And with that, I have and will put a Ring on a customer's house because a doorbell camera is very effective device. And while there are doorbell cameras with some major security manufacturers, Amazon and Google really hold the cake on this niche about putting it in. Now, Ring and Nest, and always Ring over Nest, people, because Ring allows you to at least have the option to turn off sharing and open features that track and do other nefarious things, but Nest does not, because even if it's for a long-standing company, collecting data for the purpose of dollars without the subject of the data knowing or being compensated is nefarious. So, Ring over Nest. But all that said, Ring is now going to allow your home security cameras, OnViv compatible, of course, be displayed in your Ring app, making the VMS more streamlined, and it's a dub for the big guy. We'll see how the market takes it, but I don't know. Sounds okay. Kind of cool. I'm not a fan, but I am a fan. I can't decide. But let's get on to the meat of this podcast. That's right. Diagnosis. Troubleshooting. Assessing the situation. Whatever you call it, in the security technician world, this is the holy grail of skills and abilities. I'm telling you right now. You want to make more money? You want to be recognized in your career? You want to build leverage in your company to ask for more responsibility? You want those bums you work with to start giving you shit when the boss asks you to take a look at it instead of them? Well, welcome to problem solving. Get better at problem solving. It is a force multiplier. With better problem solving skills, you're going to turn out cleaner cans. You're going to turn out more robust systems and ultimately a more secure security system, which is the very impetus to what we do. And if we are not securing the customer the most that we can, then we're not living true to our career choice. The majority of us have chosen this path and find identity in it. So if we do not strive to be exceptional when it comes to security, well, we're denying a piece of ourselves, and that's a shameful action, my friends. Let us become icons among the masses of technicians. Let us be absolute choice cuts when it comes to the alarm can, the security panel, the wire run, the network. And I'm assuring you right now, the one thing that will get you there the fastest is problem solving. Plenty of techs start with the phrase, "I don't know if we can get this," or "This isn't going to work," or "I'm going to have to call Joe and tell him that this is out of our hands." But the technician with problem-solving skills looks at it, runs through a few self-trained questions and scenarios, and then gets the job done. Shane Clary of SSI gives some insight on what he's seen over 35 years of being in the industry when he says, quote, "I'm finding that technicians have been well-trained on the product line or a particular control unit, as well as how to program the system. Depending on the requirements for the completed system, this can be an involved process that can take a lot of time to complete. And after the program has been uploaded into the control unit, there then is the checking of the system to verify that it performs as per the sequence of operations. There are times, however, that the system may not be performing as expected or has experienced a fault that prevents the system from operating as intended. The system may also be producing unwanted alarms. This is where the installer, service technician, or inspector needs to also become a detective." Well said, Shane. That's right. In problem solving, we need to be the detective. We need to be able to find out where the problem is, what the problem is, how the problem happened, and fix it. To become that detective, I want to bring up a simple but effective method called Polya's problem-solving technique. Now, in 1945, George Polya published the book How to Solve It, which quickly became his most prized publication. It sold over 1 million copies and has been translated into 17 languages. In this book, he identifies four basic principles of problem solving. And the nice thing about this is, if you can train yourself to be a good problem solver, it's literally a force multiplier, not just in your career, but in your life, with your partner, with your kids, with your family, whatever it be. Problem solving helps in every single facet of life. Now, in this book, he identifies four basic principles of problem solving, and they are: number one, understand the problem. Number two, devise a plan. Number three, carry out the plan. And number four, look back. Now, this might come off as super elementary, but let's check ourselves before we wreck ourselves, my friends, because I know a few of you out there that touch maybe one of these principles before calling it quits or getting lucky, and they are simple enough that you can start practicing them today at work, okay? After this podcast, when you go into work and pull that wire, do this thing, or terminate this end. Now, that's a good side note, because these take practice, all right? So it will be practicing. And the way to get good at solving problems is by solving problems. That's why you're going to start today and you're going to try harder tomorrow and then harder the next day. Number one, understanding the problem. This seems so obvious that it's often not even mentioned, yet I feel like people are often stymied in their efforts to solve problems simply because they don't understand it fully or even in part. Puglia taught teachers to ask students questions such as, do you understand all the words used in stating the problem? What are you asked to find or show? Can you restate the problem in your own words? Can you think of a picture or a diagram that might help you understand the problem? Is there enough information to enable you to find a solution? I promise that if you put a little bit of quietness at the introduction of the problem to think and not talk, less problems will occur during the process. That's the other thing. When we problem solve, the hard part is that it is a moving rubric. So you think that you're onto one thing and it might cause another problem, or another problem might present itself and you might not even understand if that problem was caused by what you've done. I mean, I have been in this situation 1,000 times where you click on something and now the problem that you had either went away or is still there, but a new problem is also experiencing itself, and you're just trying to grasp the network, the spider web of what you're actually looking at. And the first thing you need to do is understand the problem. And you do that by questions. You do that by using a little time to think, okay, what would cause this? What, how would this be caused? Do I need to show the computer something to fix this problem? Or do I need the computer not to see something to fix this problem? It all starts with those thinking questions and not just showing up and being like, oh, the door's not working. Okay, well, I'll start with replacing a part. Okay, nice try, buddy. This is problem solving 101, not replacing. Get in the back of the line and listen to some podcasts, baby. Number two, devise a plan. Puglia mentions that there are many reasonable ways to solve a problem. The skill at choosing an appropriate strategy is best learned by solving many problems. So you will find choosing a strategy increasingly easy as you go on in life, trying to get better at your problem solving. Strategies can include guess and check, possibility elimination, direct reasoning, looking for a pattern, solving a smaller problem within the larger problem, working backwards, or remember a similar problem that you've already been on before. The list continues, but those are some very applicable plans to our industry and our work, and I'm not going to deep dive exactly here on those, but they are worth some looking into. So Googling of the basics of direct reasoning or how to find patterns, it may seem like dumb learning, really, but and it may also seem like, well, I should have learned this in first grade, but I guarantee with the public education system today, you did not. But it is a building block, and a building block is usually just a boring, strong, dumb rock that holds up the entire pyramid. So it's worth looking into. Now, the third thing we want to do is execute the plan. After devising it, this step is usually easier than devising the plan. And in general, all you need is care and patience, given that you have the necessary skills. So persist with the plan that you have chosen. If it continues not to work, discard it and choose another. Don't be misled. This is how problem solving is done, even by high-end, elite, well-paid technical professionals. If it doesn't work, adapt. Be agile. Keep moving. And then finally, the last thing is look back. This is the most important step, hands down. When you're driving home from the site, or about to watch your nightly Netflix, or play your video game, or whatever, stop for just 3 minutes, just 3 minutes, and look back at the problem today. Walk yourself mentally through the steps and how it turned out. This can be a harder thing to do when the problem didn't get resolved fully or in the manner that you're satisfied with, but if you think it's not fun to look back at the problem, then by looking back at it and reassessing, you will begin to remove that not fun aspect from your life, okay? Soon enough, after a couple of handful of times, you'll look back to sharpen the experience and not just be upset with the outcome or the time that it took to complete it. Believe me, my friends, your security bear always comes through. This process right here is gold. And that's all I'm going to give you today, okay? You're going to be the best tech at your company and the best tech in your city. And if you want it, you're going to be able to think outside of the box and end up a freaking millionaire. You just have to do it. You are the hardest part in problem solving. The mind is king to emotions, and breath is king to the mind. So breathe slow, breathe deep, and tackle the problem simply. And I know that that is not as meaty as we usually get, but I'm telling you, that is the choice cut. That is the prime rib, the filet mignon. Just practice problem solving, and I promise you're going to be the better technician. Okay? That's it for security today. So remember to DM.
That was episode 24. This is episode 25.
If I had an hour to solve a problem, I'd spend 55 minutes thinking about that problem and 5 minutes thinking about the solution. Albert Einstein. This is Security Today.
Welcome to Security Today. I am the security industry's most diagnostic bear. I don't know what that means. Interpret it as you will, but that's B-A-E-R. So follow me right now on Instagram and Twitter at Security Bear, B-A-E-R, and this podcast on Instagram at Security Today Podcast. Share this podcast on your Instagram, and there's a chance to win $1 million. I mean, not from me. I don't have a mille. Yet, there's always a chance that you could actually win $1 million some way, somehow. So I hope you all are doing well. Listen, it's been just a hot minute. Okay, so I moved halfway across the country, but that can only be an excuse for so many episodes. I think this might be the last one, but I'm going to use it. And I went to ESX, which was amazing, which I still have to do a full recap and breakdown, which I will. Hopefully that will be dropping this week, but I'm not totally sure yet. So listen, that's all I can do. I'm doing my best here, okay? Humble beginnings, right? I'm podcasting out of a spare room in my mom's house. That's not a joke, and I don't find shame in it because you know what? My mom's awesome. So anyways, last podcast you listened to was about diagnostics, and we are back to hammer out some more diagnostics. That's right. We talked about how to problem solve. I hope you're using that. I hope you're asking questions. I hope you're doing everything that podcast taught you to do. And this one, we're going to go over some more diagnostics when it comes to troubleshooting. So we'll get started with this week. That's right. Let's talk about what we're going to talk about. The first thing that we're going to bring up this week is IDETER, without the first E, because it stands for immediate deterrence. I don't know why you would get rid of that E, but it is, in fact, one of the MVP winners of 2022 for Security Sales and Integration Magazine. We'll talk about that. Next, I'm going to brief you on Hike taking another kick in the nards, which any day Hike Vision or Uniview gets kicked in the nuts is a good day. Also, I can't really mention them anymore on this podcast without adding
Fuck hike. All right. There's that. And we're going to get into the meat of it. That's right. Diagnostics, which is opens, shorts, and grounds. We're now going to get into some of the techie talk on how to problem solve and play out diagnoses. So pay attention, Joe. This one's for you. I just like to believe that there's a Joe out there listening and he dropped his coffee and looked at his radio really quick. Anyways, let's chit chat. Finally, someone stepped up and went toe to toe with the Red Dragon, the communist lying sack of shit known as Hikvision, has controlled the low-cost market of the IP video cameras for a hot minute, until now. Large non-PRC manufacturers, including Hanwha, who's out of Korea, and purposely avoided competing with Dahua and Hikvision in their core stronghold of low-cost commercial cameras, but it's been the running excuse to old Uncle Bear's Instagram DMs for something close to 5 years that the cost just can't be shook by the smaller low-volt outfits. Well, if they don't bid that low dollar amount, then they can't compete with the large companies that are coming in and peddling the hike. And that point has a point, and I understand where they're coming from. Ultimately, my advice has always been to drop Hiker Dahua for their knowing atrocities that they have helped commit in the Xinjiang province against the Uyghur people, but I did see their point. Well, guess what? Massive low-volt companies who steal jobs from smaller guys because you peddle a genocidally involved company for your go-to-market security strategy. Well, Hanwha just shat all over that parade, didn't it? Hanwha is launching its lowest cost A-series, which the company confirms is targeted to compete against PRC manufacturers, including Dahua and Hikvision, for cost-conscious dealers. Most non-PRC manufacturers, actual ones like Avigilon, Axis, Bosch, Hanwha, etc., not Western relabelers like Provision IR, Speco, or TVT, avoid what is commonly called by executives as the run rate business, and seen on the shelves of local distributors. Very low-cost cameras and recorders are typically small. The typically smaller dealers were going and buy the same day for local small jobs. Well, now has something to compete against it. This is good news, especially in the U.S. low-volt companies that provide low-cost security to clients across the nation. Well, guess what? The gap is being filled. Enter Hanwha. Hanwha says that camera MSRP pricing will be in the range of $190 to $270 for dealer pricing, putting dealer pricing at $90 to $150 range, competing with the Hikvision Value Series and the Dahua Light Series. However, both Hikvision and Dahua offer low-cost models as well, like Hikvision Value Express, with street prices well under $100 for 4 megapixels outdoor fixed focal cameras. But Hanwha is trying to put a chink in the old armor, and they're doing a great job. So finally, I can say, stop putting in Hike. And for the love of God, please put in Hanwha. That's a much better decision. So let's go on to our product highlight. That's right, I Deter. That's lowercase I, capital D, T-E-E-R, which stands for Intelligent and Immediate Deterrence of Crime, and is an automated and complete security package proven to foil 98% of intrusions without the delays of human intervention. The company reported that. I now see how that sounds. The iDeter solution is ready for easy deployment and RMR generation at commercial facilities. It can be used as a standalone security system or to augment guard services with integrated technology at the protected premises. Imagine half of a mixing bowl attached to the wall with lights, camera, and speaker. That's an iDeter product. And they're fully NDAA compliant, ETL listed, FCC certified, and they carry an IP65 environmental rating. I mean, how can they get any better? They call it the NIO node. That's N-I-O with a line above it, like an umlaut. They're positioned around the protected premises to detect intrusion with a 4K camera with wide-angle lens, multiple motion detectors, omnidirectional microphone, and quad-core intelligence. We're going to dedicate an episode to this product and other products like it moving forward with live guard and live video monitoring type of capabilities. This is definitely something to go look at, because I think that if you are in security at all, even if it's your side hustle on the weekends, you're doing it or something like that, or you work for a a big company and they put in security, this is a product that you can carry. It's called iDeter, and it's pretty much taking the place of, we all know, the commercial type of warehouse district buildings that have that like half dome electrical light on it. You can just take that out and put this one in, and now it comes with a camera, a siren, lights to say, hey, get off the property, we see you. So if you got people crossing through your warehouse district on bicycle, or lingering, or going through the trash, or, you know, breaking in, or scoping the place out, they will now be alerted that the place is secure. And that, my friends, is called deterrence. Let's get to the meat. Our bud, Albert, he's got another quote. He said, "We cannot solve our problems with the same level of thinking that created them." That guy was a genius. Listen, with that, I'm going to go over some opens, grounds, and shorts, okay? So diagnosing a problem is often a large endeavor because sometimes the problem is buried deep and it'll take getting some trouble points out of the way to find out what the problem truly is, which we talked about last episode, that the problems can evolve into more problems, but as long as we continue to have solid problem-solving skills and we know how to diagnose specific things to our industry and our panel, then we will succeed. With that, there are some easy things to get out of the way first. Oftentimes, people just think it must be the device. We'll just replace it, which isn't a horrible direction to start in, but it is a horrible habit to get in because it is easy to show up and something's not working, so you just replace it. But you'll get caught in that. You'll get caught in that noose pretty quick when that device wasn't the problem. If the device isn't working, make sure it's getting power. The old tried and true adage of, is it plugged in, ma'am? You know, that when you call anybody who's in IT and your computer's having problems, have you restarted it? Is it plugged in? Well, it's unfortunate how many times that question actually works. If it doesn't have power, then get the device on a separate power source that you know is working, and this will often narrow down if it's a wiring issue or if it's the device issue. You can also quickly check IPs. You can see if you can ping the device. Make sure that there is power on the output at the panel. Verify serials, MACs, card numbers in programming, those sorts of things. A whole plethora of first steps that are soft and not really time consuming. If those aren't shaking the problem out, the tree, then you can move to, well, tier two, if you will. This can go in a couple different directions depending on what the device is, what the problem is, or if the problem is even consistent or not. That's why last week we talked about the first principle in problem solving. Everybody? Understanding the problem. Those first steps I mentioned above are kind of feeling out the problem to get a better understanding, because we can't solve the problem with the same level of thinking that created it. And this panel, let's be honest, this panel is something that you put in, isn't it? You're back. Those first steps I mentioned above are feeling out the problem, but I want to address a specific route of diagnosis when dealing in physical security systems, IDSs, VMSs, PACSs, that's physical access control systems, and more. And that is diagnosing the wiring. I can say in hundreds of not working alarm and access panels I've stood in front of that the problem often would shake out to the wiring. It wasn't common, but it did happen, and when it did, if you didn't have a few basics, your 5 minutes, well, turned into 5 hours. So let me run through a couple of these. That way, you won't be in the dark next time you're standing in front of that panel that's not working. So some of this might be elementary to you, but that's a good approach if from this angle, so that those who don't know this information can grasp it through a podcast format, and for those who know a little but need more can fill in the dark spots of their understanding and grasp it as well. And if you know a ton of information, well, it's just a good recap to be like, oh yeah, I do try that. Uh-huh, I try that. Oh, well, why am I even listening to this podcast? No, it's freaking amazing. That's why. Hey, let me just jump back in here. A circuit is a complete path in which electrons flow from a power source through switches and control devices, ending and returning after powering the load or the device that provides resistance on the circuit. Think of the simplest circuit like this. A power source, like a battery, has a 16-2 wire, that's 16 gauge and two wires, usually red and black, running between the battery and a light bulb. The electricity starts from the battery and flows on the red wire through the light bulb. Some people think it's the black wire. Don't talk about it. Lighting it up and then returns on the black wire back to the battery. This completes the path. The light bulb is our load because that is what is going to be putting resistance on our circuit. Think of resistance as the measurement of how easy it is to shoot electricity through the circuit. Is it really hard? So much so that the electricity might not even complete the path and light the light bulb? Or is it too easy that it's going to damage the device on the other end of how high the current or flow of electricity is? Now, in your mind, don't shut your eyes, you're probably driving. In your mind, imagine that the red wire is going to go through the light switch and give us some control over the flow of that circuit. Meaning, if we turn the light switch off, the electricity can't get there to the light bulb. And if we turn it on, then the electricity can get there and it turns the light bulb on. Also in your mind, add a fuse on the back on the black wire right next to the power source. That will come in handy later. With all of that in mind, we are now going to talk about an open circuit first. Listen, an open circuit simply means that the loop from the battery to the light bulb and back is broke open. If you're pulling a wire and it nicks a corner or cuts the red wire in half, that's an open. Your switch that we put in simply controlling the open, or I'm sorry, the switch that we put in is simply controlling an open when it's switched off by breaking open the circuit. Then when you close that circuit, the electricity flows. So sometimes on a panel, when we're detailing wires, they can get scored from the stripping. They can get nicked or bent or moved around on the actual panel in the termination, and they can break and leave your black wire hanging there in the panel of the device, and then the device isn't working. Well, that is an open. When it's right up there next to the terminal, I call it the hanging chad. That's a 2000s reference for you young guns listening. It can be difficult to find opens and shorts and grounds because half the time they're out there in the wild somewhere in your wire run and your rat's nest, and so it can be difficult to do. But to troubleshoot an open, there's a couple steps you can take. If your red and your black wires are landing on all your devices, like in a fire alarm, then sometimes you can narrow the short or the open down by knocking that device 6 in the circuit. By knowing that device 6 in the circuit still works, but 7 through 10 are all dead. Well, that means that somewhere between 6 and 7, you might have a problem. If you know how your devices are landed in the circuit, then sometimes you can meter at each device and narrow it down where your wire might be cut. It's the same kind of principle. One surefire way to find an open between your battery and our light bulb, quote unquote, is by taking the wires off your power source at the can or at the panel and wire nutting them together. Then go out to your light bulb and we measure continuity on your meter. That's the one that makes it ding when you put the two posts together between the red and the black wire. Continuity is a setting on most meters that kind of has that symbol of the speaker sound icon. And when there is continuity, the meter will beep a constant tone. Continuity is just the meter sending a little tiny bit of voltage down the line and seeing if it returns. So if we tie the two wires together at one end, because it's all the way across the building, and then we test continuity between those two wires at the device, well, if there's no tone, that means that somewhere in the line, one of those wires is cut or broke open. And we go from there depending on your standard operating procedure. If you do get the tone, however, well, that means that there is continuity. So you got to move on to some maybe more expert level type of diagnosis. Let's move on to the short. A short is different from an open, and it seems to be the word that a lot of DIYers or untrained folk go to when describing an electrical system isn't working. It's the old, well, maybe it's a short. Yeah, it's a short. I think it's shorted. Okay, Handy Dan, slow down there. A short is unique in that it means the electricity has found a shorter path back to the source. So, shorts can be common, especially in wire runs where someone wasn't being very delicate, because more often than not, if the wire is getting cut on a corner or a sharp piece of metal when it's coming into a can without bushings, people are going to get a kick out of me saying that, then it's stripping somewhere on the jacket away on both wires and they end up touching bare copper to each other, right? And the electricity now has found a shorter path back to the battery. It didn't even make it to the light bulb. So electrical shorts are a more dangerous system error because the shorter path means that there's less resistance. And due to a law by George Ohm, that means that the amperage goes up, causing the electricity to go faster, and that can heat the wires even to flammable temperatures. This is why earlier in the podcast, we stuck a fuse by the power source. Remember that guy? Just saved your ass. So that if it sees too many amps coming back because of the short, well, it will blow or it will trip and it will stop the flow of electricity. Another place that I have personally seen shorts is right there at the termination on the panel, or right there at the termination on the device. It happens with stranded wires usually, where the terminal screws or slots are close together and a strand or two gets mashed and touches and reaches over and gets all feely and handsy, right? Other short problems can be rodents chewing on the wire, a staple from the sheetrock, and screws puncturing the wire from your sheetrock guys, because they do not care about us low volt or electrical folk. Finding a short is easy, though. It takes an ohm reading at the panel and the device. Disconnect both wires. Then make sure that they are not touching each other at either end. And at one of the ends with your multimeter, set to ohms, touch both posts to each wire. Touch one post to one wire and one post to the other. If you get anything over 0.4 or 0.5 resistance, well, then your wires are touching something else and they're shorted. Ideally, you're looking for no resistance at all, but sometimes in longer runs, if you're getting 0.1, 0.2, 0.4, well, that's okay. Then the wire isn't necessarily shorted. If it's above one, then you can call that short. You can call that a short for sure, and follow your standard operating procedures. Now, finally, let's get to the grounds. Technically, what we just talked about was a short to power, and that is different from a short to ground. It is checked the same way, though, by reading ohms on the multimeter. The difference lies in that two copper wires aren't touching to create a shorter path, but instead, one copper wire is touching a grounded object, like a metal security can, or any sort of metal, or earth out in the wire run. And with the panel grounded, the electricity finds its way back to a source through the ground, and thus causes a short to ground, or just a ground. The only way to determine if it's a short to ground or if it's a short to power is to, well, find the short and see what it's touching. It's hard to tell. Now, the final electrical error that I want to talk about is a near-end crosstalk. Now, this is kind of moving to all my MSPs just pump their fists like, I listen to this guy every week because I want to support him, but he never talks about my shit. Well, guess what? This is definitely an error that you're going to find in more and more data runs and networking now that security and the two are continuing to merge closer and closer every single day. So it's really worth the mention. This is also a rare error that will appear in security in weird, erratic, and sometimes perplexing symptoms. So if you're walking through your problem-solving skills and you're getting really erratic behavior, that this device is working and then sometimes it's not, and then when it does work, that device doesn't, and all sorts of things, that could be near-end crosstalk. Now, when a current flows through a wire, an electromagnetic field is created around it, like in Stranger Things, when he has his compass, right? Okay, each pair is twisted because this allows opposing fields to cancel each other out. That's why the tighter the twist, the more effective the cancellation, and the higher the data rate supported by the cable. Maintaining the twist ratio is the single most important factor for your successful installation. If wires are not tightly twisted, if you don't get them in the RJ45 connector right up to the butt of it, or you don't get it, you know, right really close tight, and you have that typical Handy Dan where the wires are all strung out and they're straight next to each other, well, that can result in what's called near-end crosstalk, or next. Most of us have experienced a telephone call where we could hear another conversation faintly in the background. If you're anywhere, if you're born anywhere before 2000 or 1999, well, that's called crosstalk. In fact, the name crosstalk derives from telephony applications where talk came across the line. In LANs, local area networks. Next occurs when a strong signal on a pair of wires is picked up from the adjacent pair of wires. Next is the portion of the transmitted signal that is electromagnetically coupled back into the received signal. In many cases, excessive crosstalk is due to poorly twisted terminations, like I've mentioned, at connection points. This is why when you see all green lights, hashtag or at all green lights, go follow him right now, not untwisting the wires before he punches it into the keystone, into his at vertical cable crimpers, hashtag ninja plug. It isn't just because he looks freaking cool doing it. It's because, well, per ANSI TIA 568C.0, your termination should twist right to the punch. Now, if you think you're experiencing crosstalk, then you can use similar to a Fluke DSX cable analyzer, something in those lines. If you are experiencing it, go look that up. And it can tell you if at either end of your termination, you're picking up that crosstalk. Now, on all of that, my friends, I leave you with the 2 meters that I use in the field, because how are you going to know how to do all this diagnosis if you don't know which tool to get? I'll tell you, there's a lot of debate out there and a lot of guys who say, well, you should use this or you should use that. You can use whatever you want as long as the meter works. But in the field, I use the Fluke 117 and the Fluke 323, which I noticed they actually have a combo package on their website for these two together, which where was I when that was happening? Also, a voltage meter pin like a Fluke 1AC2. These are tools that you can use every day as a service tech and every other job as an install tech. You should invest in them because I know Fluke can be expensive, but you need to invest in your tools because these are the things that are going to be paying you in the future. Now, your continuity setting might not be sending enough voltage down the line if you have a cheap meter, and that can give you a false negative, which can mean hours of work when it could have been 5 minutes. I'm telling you, invest in your tools is investing in yourself. And you better write that shit down, boy. You gang gang now, rolling in the deep, Adele, because you got the tools to do it. Listen, I want you to be the better tech. This is why I put this stuff out. Okay, this is why I do podcasts like this, because I want you to be the better tech tomorrow. So as you're listening to this, now you know. Now you can sound smart and be better. And that's what I'm here for, baby, to make you look good. Your old Uncle Bear make you look good. That's right. I want to thank you so much for listening. I really hope these last two podcasts do help, okay? So go back and listen to get those problem-solving skills down. And if this is new stuff to you, or if it's a refresh, or if it's just a resource that you get out there in the field and you're like, how do I find a short again? Oh, yeah, baby. Uncle Bear already helped me out on that one. I'll go check him out right now on Security Today Podcast. Listen, I really hope that they do help. And I know that the main subject has been more skill-oriented lately and less security industry topic. But I have an aim with this podcast, and I'm trying to meet it by mixing. That's it for Security Today this week. Thank you so much for re-listening to those. I hope that they are informative. I want to curb some of the things that I'm doing around stuff just like that, because I feel as if there just isn't enough resources out there for the physical security technician. And I know that some of my posture in the Security Today podcast environment is going to be open and is going to allow for new security skills and trades and cyber and operational and those sorts of things pour into some of the content on this podcast and in our educational resource. But I do want the security technician to be taken care of, as that is who this podcast was started out for. So I hope those help. I hope you have a good week and a good Merry Christmas. There might be something next week. Hold on. Yeah, there might be something next week for you guys, okay? Just a little, maybe another re-listen or something like that, but I'm trying to make it to that January 1st date for the Black Picket Fence Professional Access Wiring course. So thanks, guys. Have a great week, and don't forget to DM me if you are doing anything awesome. I want to know. All right, deuces.